Redefining School Success. For more than 50 years, since the Johnson administration, public school students across America have taken standardized tests, and their schools have been evaluated based on them. The idea has been to create more equity in education, and other initiatives, including No Child Left Behind and proficiency-based education, have built on that mission. But despite their good intentions, almost all of the initiatives have had major flaws and created a system in which kids study for the test, poor-performing schools lose funding, and local communities feel disenfranchised. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine is now working to change the way schools are evaluated, incorporating the values of their communities and taking a more holistic approach. We'll talk with some of those leading the effort. What kind of changes would you like to see? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. What makes a school successful? There are so many possible answers to that question. And today we are going to hear from state education leaders to find out what Maine public schools are doing to redefine success and what the state is doing to look at success differently right now. Joining me in the studio, Paige Nichols. She is Chief Innovation Officer at the Maine Department of Education. Heather Whitaker is an alternative education teacher at Gorham Middle School, and she is Maine's 2020 Teacher of the Year. And Todd Finn is superintendent for Lewiston Public Schools. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you think test scores are a good measure of how well a school is doing? Is your child's school doing something innovative to prepare students for the future? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I want to welcome all of you to the studio today. I know this is a very high interest topic to people throughout the state. And I just want to start, Paige, by talking to you about even your role as Chief Innovation Officer. We're having this conversation just a few months after the governor has signed a bill designed to give local school districts more power. This comes after several years of real focus on something called proficiency-based education. If people haven't been following closely, they might not even know that everything's changing. Why don't you sum up? Where is the State Department of Education right now? How are you thinking about evaluating schools?
Yeah, so thank you, Jennifer. So in my role as Chief Innovation Officer, which was inspired by the governor, in fact, after she developed an Office of Innovation within the governor's office, I'm looking at ways of innovating in schools kind of across a broad spectrum. So looking at, you know, technological and scientific innovations and innovations with how we evaluate and assess, innovations with how we manage a classroom. So where we are right now as a department is we are looking to highlight the expertise in the field. Maine has the most amazing teachers and educators in our schools, and we're looking to give back, give them back a lot more autonomy and power.
So what does that mean exactly? How what does that look like?
So we're pulling back from mandating additional things that cause teachers to have to shift their focus from the important work that they're doing with students in the classroom and onto more like timelines and schedules of reporting. So we're asking them what we can do to support their work and trying to shift away from asking them to report to us, but instead looking to the Department of Education as a resource to the field.
All right. Well, turning to you, Heather, congratulations on being named 2020 Maine Teacher of the Year. As you hear what Paige is saying, the Department of Education pulling back on what it's mandating teachers do, I'm guessing that's music to your ears.
Absolutely it is. And thank you so much, Jennifer, for having me in today. The one thing that we're really fortunate about in the Gorham School Department is that we also have an administration that supports tremendously innovation and allowing teachers who are doing the work in the field, in the classroom, the autonomy to provide students with interventions and enrichment that are tailored to the students that are created by the teachers. And so to know that with the support of the commissioner and the Department of Education, that they will also send that message to our wonderful administration, it just empowers us more as educators to be responsive to the needs of our students.
Isn't that what it was supposed to be all about? Wasn't proficiency-based education supposed to be what you said, crafting education for each student? Where did that sort of go wrong, or did it? Go ahead, Todd.
Well, I would say that proficiency-based education turned into proficiency-based grading in terms of how folks were looking at that, and the process got lost along the way. The idea itself is a fantastic idea. In Atlanta, we would call that competency-based learning, and up here it was proficiency-based learning. But if you're looking at walking into a classroom where there are learning targets, and so everyone knows what you're supposed to be learning, and there are pacing guides, and we're doing mapping so our students know where they are, and we're looking for performance indicators. It's so rich and so deep in terms of what we should be doing in terms of instruction. But I think that what got lost along the way was that in lieu of ones, twos, threes, and fours, and folks trying to use a secret decoder ring to figure out what that meant and how does that convert and what will colleges think of this. And I think that here in Maine, it really could have worked had there been other tenets in place to support that.
All right. So now here we are. And Todd, it's so interesting to get your perspective because you've have experience in school districts in many other states. You mentioned Atlanta, also North Carolina. How are the questions we're having here, the conversations, the trying to grapple with what's best for our kids? How are they similar and different in Maine to the other states where you've worked?
I think Maine is more cutting edge. Maine is a lot more open-minded. And I think Maine at least was brave enough and wise enough to say, you know what, this isn't quite working out the way we wanted it to, and let's go back to the think tank and talk about this. And so rather than, you know, try to drive a point home or say that we've invested so much time in something so we'll force the issue, Maine, of all the places I've been, has realized that it's the learning experience that's the most important thing. And so what you do is you open your minds up and you surround yourself with other folks that can contribute to the conversation. And so I do think that that's where Maine will eventually pull ahead.
We're not talking about, you know, there's so many things that people, so many hot button issues, so many things that people are going to associate with stepping back and rethinking evaluating kids. And for some of those people, they're going to say, let's do less standardized testing. Let's do less high stakes testing. But you're not talking about that, are you? You want to see more testing in your school district.
So actually the opposite. So maybe I didn't message that correctly. We want to actually see less standardized testing and more authentic assessment. We want to see our learners be able to show their work and to write about that work and think about their thinking and be able to contribute to conversations along the lines of, this is what I'm most proud of, and this is some work that maybe I didn't do so well on, and here's why. And our parents are asking for the same thing. Our parents are saying, we want to see our kids work. We just don't want to see a scatter plot or a graph. We want to see what our kids have done.
I see. Okay. I understand, Paige, that this department is going to be going around the state looking for input. What is that going to look like? When is that going to happen?
So it actually started in the summer. It started in June in a series of think tanks. So there's been 6 think tanks throughout the state where educators are invited to come provide their input about what this might look like, what their level of interest in something like this is. Moving forward, I'm going to be doing a listening tour throughout the state, which will include more student voice. We have a student advisory board to the Department of Education that is interested in offering input into this as well. And I think the real goal of Maine Defines School Success is that we recognize that there's a lot of weight placed on standard assessment scores, and we also recognize that they're not a holistic measure of success. So we're not looking to eliminate standard assessments. We're looking to include other parts of the story in a broader picture of what defines school success.
All right. Well, of course, you know, the big question here is as we change how we think about testing, the whole reason, and stop me if I'm wrong, but really the whole reason that we've been doing testing as a country for 50 years is trying to get equity into schools. So kids, the value in their school isn't dependent on where they live, clearly it has not worked. But if you're not doing it that way, how do you guarantee that schools continue to be good and continue to be aiming for excellence?
Well, the one thing that I know is that every educator I meet is aiming for excellence, and that we should have pride in our education system and our teachers and support them and believe that they are doing the best for our communities, because that's why we got into the profession.
Right. But isn't funding often tied with these, that schools that need help get more funding because they fall behind?
Yeah. So there is funding tied to the state assessment. So the MEA, which is the assessment we use in Maine, is tied to our Title I funding, which comes from the federal government. It's the reason why we need people to participate in the test right now, is that that's the way that we get that important funding for schools. You're correct when you say that the purpose of ESEA, which is the Elementary and Secondary Schools Act, which was enacted, I think, in 1964 or 5, was designed to increase equity in schools. The two recent reauthorizations of it, which are No Child Left Behind and Every Student Succeed Act, have put more focus on just the outcomes and rating and ranking schools and less on looking at exclusionary practices in schools.
Mm. And you said something very quickly there that I think is really important to this conversation, and that's the rating and ranking of schools. When did this start? When did we start ranking schools? I mean, it comes out all the time now, and not just in colleges, but and not just high schools, but even younger. Where did that come from, and what does that do to Maine schools?
Well, we live in a 0 to 100 world, and when you look at that and look at the speedometer in your car and our exchange rate and even the metric system, folks are always going to see where they are and want to wonder where someone else is too. And when we start assigning values to schools based on test scores or outcomes or snapshots in certain points in time, it's natural that folks will say, well, we were 88% proficient and you were 62%. So therefore, you know, we're a better school or a better school district, when we should be looking for schools that foster personal growth and that encourage creativity and that foster a positive self-concept. And so how do you quantify that? Because if you start chasing test scores, you might just get them. Along the way, you also might give up on the fact that we want our students to communicate and collaborate and critically think and become citizens and become responsible citizens along the way. We stop talking about social and emotional learning and the things that will really allow them to be successful in college, career, and in life. And so we got to be very, very careful with ranking based on a single metric rather than the holistic approach.
We're talking about redefining school success in Maine. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address is talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'd like to hear some examples, because this is sort of a big theoretical conversation we're having here. And I'm wondering if, Paige, you can name some schools that are doing really interesting, innovative things that the local community is behind that are sort of examples of where we want to be headed.
So there, you know, in the few months that I've been in this role, I've traveled throughout the state and visited, you know, parts of the state that I'd never been to before, which are rural communities with schools that are just doing incredible things with very limited resources. So some of the things that I've seen that I've been really impressed by are school gardens. I was in one community that had the most enormous and elaborate and involved school garden that included aquaponics, and they had a fishery, and the students were involved in the actual process of, you know, growing all the food, and then also the business side of selling and distributing that. There are other communities that are linking their curriculum to their local industry, so around whether it's like fishing community and island towns, or to forestry in rural towns in central Maine. So I've seen a wide variety of really impressive things, and teachers who are so deeply passionate and involved with the work with their students that they've really been able to draw out collaboration and communication and creative problem solving in their students, and I've been really impressed by the incredible work going on statewide.
Heather, what if I know as Teacher of the Year, you get to travel the state. Why don't you add to that? Is there something you've seen that you've been really excited about and you'd like to see not just maybe the actual project, but also the way of thinking about the project replicated?
So I'm very excited to start my work as Teacher of the
Year.
Oh, you
haven't started traveling yet?
So I haven't started traveling yet, but certainly I'm very excited to visit the County Teachers of the Year from 2019 that are part of my cohort so that they can celebrate and we can celebrate together the amazing work that they're doing.
Okay.
One talking piece in Gorham that we have, as a different metric to assess students is what's called a Skills for Life rubric, and we're looking at assessing students on taking responsibility for their learning in behaving ethically and respectfully. And that is a way that we're able to work with students around the social-emotional learning and show the growth that they have over the years with skills that are really essential for being successful in life and in the workforce.
Sure, and Todd, I see you out of the corner of my eye nodding vigorously. Is this the kind of thing that you're bringing to the Lewiston schools?
Absolutely. We'd like to bring Heather to Lewiston schools as well. we were told no recruiting, but how can you not?
I don't know if Superintendent Perry will be too happy about that, Todd.
So we will be asking our school committee tonight to approve a position for social and emotional learning coordinator in Lewiston, and that will become part of our curriculum team at the district level. So that we can ensure that not only our math, science, language arts, PE are accounted for, but also the SEL portion of that, too. We want our students to be able to have self-awareness and self-management and social awareness and responsible decision-making and building relationship skills. And those things are cross-curricular, and it's important that we can account for that, too. So when Heather mentioned that, I just had to say, yes, this is incredible.
We have to be really mindful of the population of students that we work with and the type of growth we want them to have. And when I think about some of the needs I see within my own population, and I made a little list for myself, homelessness, hunger, death in the family, alcohol and drug addiction by their family or use, their own personal use, incarceration by family members, critical family members, exposure to domestic violence, abuse, you know, themselves being abused, poverty, you know, so that's chronic stress and trauma. And of course, equity-wise, we want those students to absolutely meet standards and make gains. But at the same time, we can't ignore the trauma stories they bring into the schools. And we need to be responsive so that they can become adults that are self-actualized.
Mm. Such a wonderful conversation. We are going to take a quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to hear your voice about how we need to change the way schools are evaluated, what defines success. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bull Moose, celebrating the tactile experience of reading and proponents of dog ears and bookmarks. Locations across Maine and at bullmoose.com. The Freeman Ellis Family Fund, supporting Maine Public Radio, local, national, and international news you can trust. And Maine Farmland Trust, celebrating 20 years of growing the future for farming. Share your stories and get involved at mainefarmlandtrust20th.org.
On the next Fresh Air.
You ain't no general, you ain't no copper, you ain't the president, and you ain't my father. And I'm sick of you acting like you is.
Robert Pattinson. He stars in the new film The Lighthouse, playing an apprentice to a lighthouse keeper. Pattinson became a teenage heartthrob for his role as a vampire in the Twilight films. Join us.
You can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Are you a regular listener to Morning Edition? When you miss it, do you wish there was some way you could still hear it, even if it's not on the radio? Well, now you can, if you have an Alexa smart speaker. Just say, "Smart speaker, please play Morning Edition." Alexa will then ask you which station you want to hear, and you, of course, will say, "Maine Public Radio." And then Alexa will play back the last full hour of Morning Edition. So you can hear the most recent hour of Morning Edition with Erwin Gratz until 3 each afternoon. At this point in time, this is only for Alexa smart speakers. We'll let you know if Google Home learns how to do this. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are discussing a statewide effort to redefine what school success means. Joining me, Heather Whitaker, who is alternative education teacher at Gorham Middle School, and she is Maine's 2020 Teacher of the Year. Todd Finn is superintendent for the Lewiston Public Schools, and Paige Nichols is chief innovation officer with Maine's Department of Education. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Paige, during the break, we were talking about this idea of school rankings, and you say there's some myths related to how schools are ranked.
So, I guess just the one I wanted to bring up, because I think it's not maybe widely known, is that when states are ranked against each other, it's really like measuring apples and oranges, because the test state to state is different, just to begin with, and the cut scores in each state are different. And the cut scores for the Maine state assessment, the MEA, the cut scores are incredibly high because we have teachers with very high expectations of our students. And so when they set the cut scores during the proficiency-based movement, our cut scores were set very high. So those are just a couple things that I think may be important for the public to know why there's risk in measuring our state against other states or any state against another.
Joining us now on the line, Emmanuel Pariser. He is co-director of education at the Maine Academy of Natural Sciences in Hinckley. Thanks for calling in, Emmanuel.
Well, thanks very much for having me. And I want to thank you for hosting this really important show. And also a big shout out to Robbie Feinberg for his great education reporting on Maine Public.
Hear, hear. Thanks for mentioning Robbie. Emmanuel, you've had a long career in education in Maine and have been involved with different approaches to meeting kids where they are. What do you think makes a school, and I'm putting this in air quotes here, successful?
Well, one of the things that I use to judge our success is whether alumni come back to visit us. I know that's a very anecdotal process, but in the schools that I've worked in, I've just seen, you know, day after day, people coming back, thanking the teachers that worked with them. And I think you'll find a consensus among really great teachers that they've had that kind of impact that brings the students back. Now, it's not something that can be easily comparable, but if schools, you know, just track the number of alumni that came back just to say hi or just to get some help with a FAFSA or something of that nature, I think you'd find some pretty interesting results.
I know that just by its nature, the Maine Academy of Natural Sciences is different than many other most other public schools. What? How do you define success there? And what do you think is translatable from the work you're doing there to, you know, a more traditional public school?
Oh, well, we define success really through our three kind of guiding values, which are responsibility, community, and respect. And so one way of looking at it is when students leave our program, are they responsible? Are they becoming more self-directed, you know, in their approach to learning? What does their work ethic look like? Do they treat themselves respectfully and the people around them? You know, and also do they take part in building a sense of community? A lot of our students come from situations where they felt marginalized or picked on, and so they're pretty shy. They're pretty tentative about joining a community again, a school community. So are they involved in their own community? Are they involved in service learning? All of those kinds of things are ways that we measure our success, along with some standardized approaches to looking at, you know, how are they doing academically, intellectually.
Emmanuel, thanks so much for calling in. That's Emmanuel Pariser, co-director of education at the Maine Academy of Natural Sciences for Natural Sciences. We have James on Facebook. He says, I would love to see more emphasis on teaching our children good critical thinking skills at every level and in every topic. These are the skills they will need most in navigating our increasingly complex and confusing world of information. Todd?
Absolutely. I think that where we find ourselves now, probably around 2000, 2001, as a nation started chasing after test scores, was that we found ourselves down there in the quadrant of acquisition. So I'm going to acquire knowledge and give it back to you. And that's about it. And I think what the commenter is talking about is moving along that continuum of rigor and relevance so that our students can go from acquiring to assimilating, to adapting, to actually applying it to the real world. And that's where critical thinking comes into play. That's what business owners want from our graduates. That's what colleges are seeking. And that's what the world wants as well.
It's interesting to me, Paige. It strikes me that, you know, we're having this conversation about how to change how we measure success. But really, what matters from education is changing as the world changes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Maine has the Maine guiding principles, which are 5 or 6 principles that are, you know, along the lines of critical thinking, collaborative problem solving. They're really well put together and defined. And I think, you know, I'm not actually exactly sure when they were established, but in the last 10 years or so, as the things that we want our students going out into the world with. And so, you know, I think there's been some attention to that. And again, we're looking to not totally shift what defines school success, but add to the picture. And I think, you know, Emmanuel made a good point about taking the things that we're doing with students and teaching them in school and making sure that they're transferable to their life beyond. And so some of the things that he brought up, which are also included in our main guiding principles, responsibility, respect, communication, those are all things that are so important for a person to be a successful and contributing member of society. So I think any amount of practicing how to transfer that to the community is really important for students.
We have an email here from Anna. Nearly half of all Maine students rely on school meals every day and may not get proper nutrition elsewhere. But programs like school breakfast and lunch are underutilized by children who need them most due to barriers like the stigma of food insecurity. Before we can talk about measuring success in our schools, we must ensure that all children have their basic needs met so they have the opportunity to succeed. How can we reimagine the school day so that school meals are valued and normalized to eliminate stigma and increase food access for all kids at school?
That's a great question. Todd, were you going to jump in?
Go ahead.
Hunger is actually, and addressing hunger needs in schools is a significant passion of mine. What we know in Gorham is that K-8, our students are accessing our free and reduced lunch program, and that at the high school level, often our numbers dip down because the students feel that stigma. And we're looking, a cohort, myself and my peers who are really interested in looking at hunger in schools, how can we help our high school students feel more confident in accessing their food needs? And also within our district, we just started a backpack program 2 years ago, and families and students are able to sign up, and they receive food on Fridays to bring home over the weekend. And we also provide snacks during the school day so that it's not just about hunger during the day at school, but also in the evening and over the weekends.
Todd, did you want to add to that?
Sure. Lewiston, we are 100% free reduced lunch in our district. And it's very, very important that we feed our kids' bodies first before we can even think about feeding their minds. When I was interviewing for this job about a year ago this week, I was asked by the panel, what's your priority? My answer was, you got to feed these kids. We know that along with poverty comes adverse risk factors. And adverse risk factors can include food insecurity, not knowing where your next meal is going to come from. And so if our learners in our schools are worried about what's going to be for dinner or how they're going to get through the night, as opposed to what we're asking as far as where's your homework, what do you think is going to take priority? And so feeding them first, feeding their bodies actually feeds their souls and allows their minds to open up as well. I completely agree with whomever that was that sent that message in. Anna, that needs to be a priority for all of us and something we're working on in Lewiston right now.
An email from Liz. As a school counselor returning home to Maine after 18 years in Anchorage, Alaska, I'm pleasantly surprised at the baby steps being taken to address how essential social-emotional learning skills are. But we have to assist our educators to know the skills and live the skills before we expect to teach them. MSAD 44 Bethel has great efforts happening. Thanks to all who are brought into the power of social-emotional skills for teachers and kids, kids show up with emotional backpacks every day, and these backpacks are usually invisible to most. It is our job to help them unpack these emotions in order to learn.
So I can comment from a department standpoint. This is something that's incredibly important to our commissioner, and there's a new office in our department, the Office of Student Safety and Support, which includes a handful of positions that are directly related to SEL. So that office is currently hiring a handful of positions, but we're looking to put a stronger focus on trauma-informed practices and social-emotional learning, and then provide technical assistance and professional development for schools and communities.
And as a teacher, we have seen an increase in the professional development opportunities offered around SEL and trauma-informed practices.
SEL,
well.
Social-emotional learning.
Yeah. And the colleagues that I work with in Gorham are very hungry to attend trainings around these ideas.
All right. Well, we're going to go to Martha, who's calling from the Wayfinder Schools. Hi, Martha. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having me, and a shout out to Todd and Paige. I am calling from Wayfinder Schools, which has been in operation for many years, working with youth who have not succeeded in public school and need another outlet. And one of the things that I wanted to touch on is also to look at school success by looking at why some students are not succeeding in public schools. You've all touched on many of the external and also internal stresses that they face, from poverty to trauma to challenges and gaps in their education, which has caused it to be difficult for them to continue in school. So I just want to say I'm glad to hear that what Lewiston is doing in bringing SEL into the work, and also Paige in getting a student advisory committee to look at what we need in our schools to help them succeed.
Thanks for your call, Martha.
Martha, we can hi, Martha.
Martha, hi, Todd.
we can certainly, as a district, take a page from what Wayfinder is doing, and the learners that Wayfinder is able to provide services for that, for very particular reasons, we're not able to even access education. When you look at the work that Wayfinder does in identifying where students are, what those barriers are, and how they can get them to where they need to be, as a district with 6,000 kids, we can do the exact same thing. And so collaborating with folks like Martha in my first few months here has really kind of opened my eyes up.
Yeah, it's been a great collaboration. So I'm pleased to hear that you're moving on the SEL position.
Thank you, Martha, for calling in. We have an email here from Cheryl. As a nursing instructor at a university in Maine, I find students totally unprepared for college grading and expectations for due dates and passing an exam on the first try because there's only one attempt allowed. It is a rude awakening and often puts them in jeopardy of failing out. Their vocabulary is also seriously lacking. And we hear this a lot over the years. And former Governor LePage was often citing what he was hearing from universities about what the kind of remedial education they needed to do with freshmen. I mean, so the reality is that you're talking about very real things, all of you, the social-emotional learning. I don't think anyone in the audience is disagreeing with that. But also, we've got to get the kids who are going to be in a nursing program, for example. This state needs nurses ready to take it.
So nursing was my first major when I first got out of the military. I actually went to Fitchburg State College as a nursing major, so I can completely agree with how rigorous that is. One thing that we do know is the work that we ask our students to do in school, we need to raise that level of rigor. It's interesting how our students who are in the career technical education are reading manuals written at such a higher level than our students who aren't. And in Lewiston, we graduate 94% of those kiddos, whereas in the regular high school, it's around 75. And so, when students are able to think and do rather than just acquire and just spit back out, they're seeing much higher levels of success. We want to make sure that our students are having high amounts of instructional time, but also there's a high dosage of tutoring going on in our schools as well. It's interesting because as I talk to other principals, I talk to my principals and teachers, what's holding us back right now is something that we created. We created these schedules and we created these courses, and we're using that in public education as an excuse as to why we can't think outside the box and why we can't be cutting edge and prepare our students for college career and life readiness. And it's time that we come back to the table and start addressing those rather than have the excuse as to why a schedule won't allow us to do certain innovative things and really push our kids in a way that's still very, very healthy. We need to find out, well, who made that schedule and who has the power to change that? And in Maine, we do.
All right. Well, we are going to take another quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. If you want to send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Please make it brief and do it quickly. Post to our Facebook page or send a tweet. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater, Curiosity for Life, offering exceptional day school and after school options for toddlers through eighth grade. BreakwaterLearning.org. Maine Community Foundation, where you can create your own charitable fund to benefit Maine. Learn more at MaineCF.org. And Open Circle Family Practice in South Portland, dedicated to relationship-centered care for all people, now welcoming new patients.
During the Vietnam War, roughly one in five GIs actively opposed the conflict.
Once I admitted to myself that the people I had killed for nothing, an unjust cause. I had to become politically active. People were still dying.
GIs and Vietnam veterans worked closely with civilian peace activists to stop the war in Vietnam. Soldiers for Peace, a new documentary from APM Reports.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio. Thanks to all of you who contributed to our fall Let's Grow Together membership campaign, which came to a successful conclusion Friday evening. Over $275,000 were raised, and we welcomed in 400 new members. Many of you who are already supporting Maine Public as a monthly Evergreen contributor increased your monthly pledge. It all helped, and the support raised ensures that Maine Public Radio will be able to continue to provide you with an essential, relevant, independent, trusted news service. Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, how can communities be involved with determining how their schools prepare students for the future? What is it that Maine kids really need, and how to assess that? Joining me, Todd Finn with the Lewiston Public Schools, Paige Nichols with Maine's Department of Education, and Heather Whitaker with Gorin Middle School, Maine's 2020 Teacher of the Year. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Rebecca on Facebook writes, I am so on board with this. I am happy with the Biddeford schools thus far with children in first and third grades. I would love to see schools moving away from test scores being the end-all be-all. My son has requested that schools go back to ABC grading. I agree with him on that. Biddeford is working on rebuilding community involvement with community events. Additionally, Mrs. Pitts, the Biddeford school principal, reminds families to be reading with children every day and posts live videos throughout the week. Small steps in the right direction. So she's referring to her son wanting the schools go back to ABC grading. I'm guessing that means that the Biddeford schools are doing the 1-2-3 that the some did under the proficiency-based education. And I just think it's important maybe to take a step back again, and maybe I'll toss this to you, Paige. Where are we with proficiency-based education? Is it completely scrapped, or is this, if your district wants to continue with what it's doing and feels good about it, it can? I mean, it was everything we heard about for 3 years or so.
So, yeah, I mean, as a local control state, districts are free to do what is working best in their district. We have gotten rid of the proficiency-based diploma, but if districts are working in a proficiency-based model that's working well for their district, we're supportive of that.
Okay. Joining us on the line now, Chelsea Fortin Trimble. She is Federal Program Specialist for the Maine Department of Education. Thanks for calling in, Chelsea.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're having this conversation. We're talking, we're using words like local control, but it's not really that simple, is it? Maine schools remain affected by what the federal government defines as what schools should or should not be doing. How limiting is that?
Well, we've learned just how limiting it is over the past 9 months. So as most folks know, in 2015, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act was reauthorized. And in that reauthorization was the hope or promise that every state would be able to create an accountability model that was truly unique to their needs and identifying schools that should receive additional support. And so, of course, we've had some changes in leadership over the past 4 years since that happened. And we are fortunate to have a commissioner that has really been an advocate for our schools and our students. And so we just received approval for our ESSA accountability amendment last month. And yeah, there are absolutely things that the federal government says you must look at these things. But we've taken a different approach in Maine. And with Commissioner Macon's support, that's going to be a new reality for us here in Maine. And so in under NCLB, we were only looking at math and ELA achievement scores.
Well, math and language arts, yep. Go ahead.
And Maine's theory of action is that progress is something that should be celebrated and that we see in all of our schools. So our new accountability model takes into account the required ELA math achievement, chronic absenteeism, progress in language arts and math, as well as graduation for not only the four-year cohort, those students that finish in a typical 4 years, but also students that may need a little extra time to finish their high school education. So also we're looking at 5-6 year cohorts and honoring that hard work that our students and teachers are doing to make sure that our kids get what they need before they leave us and either enter the workforce or college.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Chelsea Fortin Trimble, Federal Program Specialist for Maine's Department of Education. We're going to go to Elizabeth, who's calling from Mechanic Falls. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Hi. So I wanted to talk about Finland's school system. And years ago, they were in a very similar place to us, and they made a lot of changes. And those changes included actually cutting down school time, eliminating homework, and not teaching to standardized testing anymore. And now they rank one of the number one countries in the world in education. I'm wondering how we can enact some of those same policies here and maybe see some of the same success.
All right. Elizabeth's talking about Finland, the country. Is this something one of you wants to respond to?
Sure, I can respond to that. So, yes, Finland is held up as a country that has some incredibly innovative practices in education, and they are doing really well when measured internationally. So I think there are definitely some lessons we can learn from Finland. A pretty big difference from our state and Finland is our demographics. And so that's something that we have to take into account, and it's something that's not taken into account on standard assessments. So we have very specific demographics throughout our state, you know, from very rural communities to our more urban areas. And so that's something we can't ignore when implementing programs like what Finland is using.
All right, Elizabeth, thanks for your call. We'll go to Esther, who's calling from Central Maine. Hi, Esther, go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling about the proficiency-based education that's sort of being implemented in some of the schools around the state. And going back to the comment that was made from the person calling from the nursing school earlier, I think that I really love the theory on the proficiency-based education. What my concerns are with the proficiency base, we're moving away from teaching really basic skills like time management that need to be taught. What we end up is expecting 14-year-olds to have time management skills when all the due dates become flexible. And while I really love the theory of the, you know, I do agree with kids should get chances to try over and over and learn until they master something. That's the only way learning happens. If the initial due dates, the initial you have to put effort in throughout the school year and not the day before grades are due, the whole theory collapses. And so I'm really looking forward to sort of the kinks of this new system getting worked out over the years. But right now I'm really concerned with what the current cohort of students are experiencing.
Esther, thanks so much for your call. And hi to the baby in the background. Go ahead, Todd.
Thank you.
Esther, so when we talk about proficiency-based learning, I think that what we've created here is more of a system of proficiency-based performance. And so if a child nails a target two or three times, we let them move on. Where really, maybe you didn't really learn anything. And in the moment you performed, it prevents teachers from looping back. It prevents us from going back to maybe to review as maybe we would have done back in the day. And so as our teachers maybe became more of accountants and looking at the grade book and inputting things into PowerSchool and trying to convert things into the new system, we're more concerned with in-the-moment performance than the actual learning. And so it's very heartening for me to hear that Maine has allowed folks to maybe determine a better way in their own districts. And in Lewiston, as we move back towards more traditional grading, we still want to look at very innovative practices. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're grading with a 1, 2, 3, 4, an A, B, C, D, or an emoji. It doesn't really matter as long as we know that this child is growing and these kids are performing at the best level they possibly can.
Sure, but go ahead.
And also a tenet of proficiency-based learning is that when a student doesn't understand something, we have our school-based assessments in place as educators. We reteach, we revisit, we go back. Because at the end, we don't want a gotcha and give a poor grade. We want our students to learn the content. When our students learn the content, then the college professors will be giving us the feedback that these students are going to school and they know their information. And proficiency-based learning gives me the power to give assessments again to students so that we can demonstrate their learning. And also, it increases their confidence because they know that they're learning.
So I think Esther's point is that though kids need to learn about deadlines, that the real world, that college has deadlines, that the real world has deadlines.
And I can only speak to what's happening in my little neck of the woods. There are absolutely still deadlines. Deadlines did not go away. But this notion of redos so that we are discovering who doesn't understand the information so that they can be retaught and try again. That's so critical. I mean, that's why we're here. That's why we're educators. We want to help students who don't know.
Thank you, Esther, for your call. We have a tweet. Can we please be better about addressing poverty and social inequality outside of schools so teachers in schools don't have to be trying to do that too?
Well, poverty is going to exist in schools as long as it's outside of schools as well. When those kiddos walk through those doors at 7:30, they're still going to walk in, coming from oftentimes adverse situations. And so when we want to address poverty, we have to start talking about equity, which is the one thing that can neutralize poverty. We talk a lot about, and we've talked a lot about today, about meeting students where they are. It has become part of the job of a teacher, of an instructor. In a school. So.
All right, we'll go to Ian calling from Ogunquit. Hi, Ian, go ahead.
Hey, I just got a couple minutes here, but I just wanted to say that I think it's important to, I don't know if you do that here in Maine, I'm new to Maine, is to evaluate the kids based on their learning modalities. We all learn differently. Some are kinetic, some are visual, some are audio. Some have difficulty with issues. So forth and so on. So I just, I don't know what's happening in that area in here. And if we can trace their, the way they learn, I think they would get excited about it because they would feel rewarded based on the way they learn. I'm coming from a example of my son didn't do very good in traditional school. He dropped out of high school. But we got him into, Landmark up there in Vermont, and he excelled because that was his learning. No one addressed his learning disability or his learning the way he learned, and he excelled and ended up getting into Columbia. So I don't know what Maine does to do that, but I just think it's an important issue for kids to...
Ian, thanks for your call.
And I definitely think that's why having alternative ways to assess students and report out on students so that we're reporting out on the whole child and not just using one standardized test score to tell their story. That's why it's so critical.
Yeah, and I would also say that it's important for us to remember that not everything that's easy to measure is truly important. And not everything that is truly important is easy or even possible to quantify. How do you quantify the value of a local public school that provides the identity, the social fabric, and community pride to a small rural town in Maine that has no businesses or town centers? How do you measure the individual and collective aspirations of our students? So the point of this whole project of defining school success is really to look to Maine communities about what they value most about their schools. And we hope to supplant the negative and inaccurate measuring per test scores with something that more adequately describes the phenomenal achievements of our Maine public schools.
So we're getting toward the end of the hour here. If somebody's heard this program, they want to get involved in this process, they want to be a part of the listening tour, how do they find out more? What are you looking for exactly, Paige? Is this something where people can submit letters or what are you hoping?
Please, yeah. So I want, we at the department want as many voices at the table about this as possible. So, I welcome people to reach out to me via email. Do I give that to you here on the
air? Sure.
So my email is page, P-A-G-E, dot Nichols, N-I-C-H-O-L-S, at maine.gov. And I'd be glad to hear from people as I put together more stakeholder groups throughout the state.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here today. Such a wonderful discussion about our schools and what really makes a school successful. Such a difficult word. The voice you just heard, Paige Nichols, Chief Innovation Officer for the Maine Department of Education. Also here, Heather Whitaker, Alternative Education Teacher at Gorham Middle School and Maine's 2020 Teacher of the Year. And Todd Finn, the superintendent for Lewiston Public Schools. New superintendent, right? Yeah. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.